Thank you for joining our show today. Hello, good evening. I am your host, Wanda McKinley, and your co-host, Stephanie Alford. How are you doing today, Stephanie? I am Wanda McKinley, the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused and battered women and children by providing counseling, employment training, and a safe haven. We want to help women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient women in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, and to uplift them and provide them with a new life perspective of what a normal life should be by enhancing and elevating their lives. I am a domestic violence survivor. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also very abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I endured that for about 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help women and children who have walked or may be walking in my shoes. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
I am wonderful. What about yourself?
I'm good. I know you have some things to share with us about fundraising.
Okay, yes. We Are Survivors currently have several fundraisers that we're currently doing. We have the Kroger Plus Community Rewards fundraiser that we do. If you currently have a Kroger Plus rewards card, or you can go and get one from Kroger, if you link it to We Are Survivors, then each quarter a percentage will be donated to, of what you spent will be donated to We Are Survivors. All you have to do is go to Kroger.com, make sure that you register your card, because a lot of cards, you're just using them and they're actually not registered. So you go on there and you register them, and then just make sure you choose We Are Survivors as the organization you want to link it to, or you can use our code, which is 21490. Again, that's 21490. We also have Tom Thumb. Now, same thing with them. You want to make sure that you link the card to your Tom Thumb card, and we have a form that you can use to actually link it. Our code with Tom Thumb is 13451, or you can go to TomThumb.com and download a form. Again, the code is 13451. We have Compass Bank. If you have an account with Compass Bank, if you link it to We Are Survivors, then each time that you use it, they'll do a donation to us. Or if you open up an account and link it to it, the same thing. Our code with Compass is 113631. Again, it's 113631. And we also have a discount card, which is a CPN discount card, where you get discounts from hundreds of thousands of places all over the U.S. That card is only $15, and I can assist you with any of these fundraisers. You can either give me a call at 817-320-2571 or text me, and I can assist you with getting set up with any of these. And we do want to thank you in advance for your support for We Are Survivors. Back to you, Wanda.
Thank you, Stephanie. This evening we're going to just, Stephanie and I are just going to talk about coping, surviving, forgiveness, you know, breaking the silence, just different aspects that go along with becoming a survivor versus remaining a victim. And in a book that I've recently come across, a 35-year-old survivor simply stated, "My whole life has pretty much been coping." And coping really is a way of us surviving. And being a survivor, I know that these words are going to really hit home, because I know that there are times when you look back and some of the things that you may have done or said that you may say, well, why did I do that, or why did I say that, not really acknowledging the fact that we are acting out because of what we've gone through. Coping is what you do to survive the trauma of being sexually abused. There is different levels of coping behaviors. You may have run away from home or turned to alcohol or drugs. You may have become a super achiever, excelling in school and taking care of your brothers and sisters at home. You may have forgotten what happened to you, withdrawn into yourself, or cut off your feelings from everyone else. With very few resources for taking care of yourself, you survived with whatever means were available. Many survivors criticize themselves for the ways they coped. You may not want to admit some of the things you have to do to survive, but coping is nothing to be ashamed of. You survived it, and it is very important to honor your resourcefulness. While some of the ways you've coped have developed into strengths, being successful at work, becoming self-sufficient, developing a sense of humor, being good in a crisis, others have become self-defeating patterns like stealing, drug or alcohol abuse, compulsive eating. Often one behavior will have both healthy and destructive aspects. Healing requires that you differentiate between the two. Then you can celebrate your strengths while you start changing the patterns that you no longer serve. So for me, and I don't know about you, Stephanie, some of those actually, like I said, hit home for me. I know for me, I did excel in school. Yeah, when I was in school, I pressed to have perfect attendance. I pressed for straight A's, B's. You know, if I get a B here, okay. But if I got a C, I can remember my first and only C. I was in the sixth grade. I'll never forget it. And I got my report card. I was so devastated that I walked to my grandmother's house, laid on her couch, and I cried because, to me, I had failed myself because I had set such high expectations on myself that when I got that one and only C and my entire school experience, it really crushed me. And so I know that was one of the things for me was excelling in school. And then I did take care of my sister and brother. So when your experience in school, how were you in school, Stephanie?
That was me as well. I wanted to do the best that I could. If I got a C, I felt like I was a failure. You know, I wanted to try to, you know, see what I could do to change that. You know, as you said, a lot of times to fill that void, we try to do things that will make us, I would say, look good, but not cause a lot of attention to us.
Right.
At least that's the way I was. I didn't want to cause a lot of attention because I felt, if I cause attention to come to me, then certain things might happen again. So I was one of those. I tried to do the best that I could so I didn't have to get fussed at. I didn't have to be scolded or anything. But, you know, keep me out of the limelight.
Exactly. Now, we do have a caller on the line. Are you just listening? Do you want to say something? I mean, feel free to chime in. We want to hear, if you have anything to say, we'd love to hear as well what you have to say. One thing also was I took care of my brothers and sisters at home. It's like I became the adult. And when I think about my childhood, I think about fixing dinner for my sister. My little brother Ben was in Pampers and bottles. So for me, I can picture myself in the kitchen making up meals, and making sure that my brother had his bottles, fixing his diaper bag for school. It was like I didn't really have a childhood. And I did find myself trying to identify with, am I a child in an adult world? Because I was being treated like an adult and not allowed to be the little girl that I was. And that was very difficult for me. Did you have any siblings that you were responsible for?
Well, I was the middle child. And even though I was the middle child, I was always the one to try to keep things together, try to keep the peace and everything. So even though I'm the middle child, it's more like I took on a lot of responsibility. So I know exactly how you feel about that, and that still happens today.
Isn't that something? Because I still feel, with me being the eldest of three, it was amazing how I felt like I was the mom and the dad. And I do know that a lot of times being survivors, we actually minimize what happened to us. It means we pretend what happened really wasn't that bad. And sometimes it's like, well, maybe he didn't really mean it if he hit me. Maybe he had a bad day. Or maybe if I would have just did this correctly or said this. And so we kind of minimize what is going on and what happened. Some children try to rationalize, which means they try to explain the abuse away, saying, oh, maybe he was drunk. You know, same as, you know, focusing on the abuser, making excuses for why things that are happening to you are happening to you, and not really understanding, you know, that it's not your fault. There's a poem that kind of hit me. I was just like, wow. And it's actually, I'm going to read it. And it's What My Father Told Me. And it's by Duran Laux, Laux. And it says, always I have done what was asked. Dishes stacked on rag towels, the slack of a vacuum cleaner cord, wounded around my hand, laundry hung up from a line. There is much to do always, and I do it. The iron resting in its frame, hot in the shallow pan of summer as the basins of his hands push the book I'm reading aside. I do as I'm told. His penis like the garden hose in this bedroom, in that bathroom, over the toilet, or on my bare stomach. I do the chores. I pull the weeds out back. I finger stick bugs, the snail's carcass, the dead pile of grass, put that in the black bag. At night, his feet are safe on their pads. Light on the wall to wall as he takes the hallway to my room. His voice, the hiss of the lawn sprinklers, wet hush of sweat in his hollows, the mucus still damp in the corner of my eyes as I wake. Summer ended. Schoolwork didn't suit me. My fingers unaccustomed to the slimness of a pen, the delicate touch it takes to uncoil the mind. History, a dateline pinned to the wall. Beneath each president's face, a quotation. Pictures of buffalo and wheat fields, a wagon train. Circled for the night, my hand raised to ask the question, where do the children sleep? And when I read that, I can picture this little girl doing, because I can relate, doing all the chores, doing everything that she's asked, like you said. I'm everything that you're asking me to do, I'm doing it. I'm going above and beyond. I'm making sure everything is the way it's supposed to be. So why is it that you still find the need to hurt me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I get from this poem. And what did, when you heard it, what was your interpretation?
Pretty much the same. It did make me think about the things that I had gone through, and how we do try to, you know, just tune some of the things out. At least I know I did. Years I blocked the things out for years, and whether it was using, you know, trying to be a straight A student, or you know, after I got grown, try to work, became a workaholic and everything, to block those things out because you don't want to remember those bad memories. You try to, you know, of the good things. And so for years, I blocked mine out. So it just kind of reminded me of some of the things that I blocked out.
Yes. There was something, I know, and we hear terminology a lot, like denying, which we, of course, are very familiar with. You deny that anything ever happened. Forgetting, like you said, you know, we block out a lot. I can't, no, that didn't happen. But one thing that I came across that I had never, the terminology never heard of, and I've done it, and it's called splitting. It's a clinical terminology, which refers to the tendency to view people or events as either all good or all bad. And it's a way of coping that allows a person to hold opposite of what really happened. And, for example, the child separates the father, for whom she depends on for love and protection, from the father who abused her, and that was me. This allows her to preserve an image of the good father, but at a great cost, because she is left identifying herself as bad in order to make sense of the abuse. And I never had a word to put with the behavior that me and my father had. And the few people that knew my story and had been around me and my father, they were so confused. Because for me, up until God showed me my purpose and actually started to bring back those memories, and then now I'm now feeling the anger. Now I'm going through my healing process. But before, I had practiced blocking out and the splitting, as they call it, because my father, I'm up until recently, I was daddy's little girl. And me and my father lives in San Antonio, but me and my dad were so close. This happened probably like 3 years ago. He caught me one Sunday. He's like, well, what are you doing? I said, well, it's Sunday morning. I'm getting ready to go to church. He said, well, open your door. I'm going to church with you. My dad drove 5 hours, was at my house Sunday morning in time to go to church, went to church with me, and drove back to San Antonio. That's how close me and my father was. This mm-hmm. was, like I said, within the last 3 years. So for me, I had a great, I was good at the splitting part because I wanted the dad that's supposed to love me. I wanted to be daddy's little girl. I didn't want to acknowledge that my father was having sex with me. I didn't want to acknowledge that my father was treating me like a grown woman and I'm his child, I'm his daughter. I didn't want to think about that. And until my 39th, 40th birthday is when I'm like, oh, this is not real. Mm-hmm. But I had that splitting down so packed that, like I said, people that knew my story, it confused them. But because they loved me, they just went along with it and embraced my father, because their thought process was, well, okay, maybe she's forgiven them. And if she can move forward, we can move forward with her. Not realizing that I never even dealt with it. I was in denial. I had forgotten. I had suppressed. And I just wanted to be loved like daddy's little girl. Because I, you know, that's just, you see other fathers and their daughters, and you're like, wow. That's what I want, so that's what I made in my head. And for my dad, that was okay for him because he didn't want to acknowledge or face what he had done to me so many years ago. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was probably like, whew, okay, we're not going to have to address that, talk about it. We just move forward. Because he did say that to me, like, why would you bring up all of this old stuff? Really? Why did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
So the splitting part for me was, it kind of helped me understand to some degree why I actually did what I did when it came to my father. And I do also know, you know, experience, you hear survivors talk about how they leave their bodies when the abuse is happening. And I know for me, I would actually focus on something else or go to a different place, just more relaxing, something that was fun, just close my eyes and in my head just think this is going to be over soon. Mm-hmm. And that's how I made it through the time that the abuse was actually happening. Did you have like a certain place that you went to? Did you focus on something to emotionally, because we couldn't physically remove ourselves, but psychologically remove yourself as the abuse was taking place?
Yeah. And then oftentimes before I would go to that place, I would be like, okay, could you just please hurry up, you know, because, it's just hurting and then I did eventually have to go to, you know, thinking of other things because it was just eating me up inside, you know.
Right. Now, I know for some people, being able to, sure, I've had some people actually bring up, like, trusting themselves. As we grow older and become parents, because of what we've endured as a child and or as an adult, we seem to want to overprotect our kids. Some actually, I've heard of cases where the parent begins to abuse their own children because that is their way of thinking. And I know some people ask themselves, can they trust themselves? Can I listen to what's right, to what's wrong, and knowing that, okay, when I was a victim, what happened to me was not my fault. What I had to go through has made me a better person. What I endured is not gonna last forever because I've come out. I'm on the other side. I've survived. No longer am I a victim, but I am a survivor. And I believe that forgiveness is very important. And they say that, you know, part of the healing process, there are stages that we go through. And one of the stages, they say, is the decision to heal. And once you recognize the effects of abuse in your life, then it's a good thing to make a commitment, an active commitment, and stick with that commitment to begin your healing process. And your healing process only happens when you choose to do it and when you're willing to do it. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree.
And they also say that there's an emergency stage. And the emergency stage, they believe, is when you begin to deal with your memories that are suppressed and your suppressed feelings. And I am a witness. It will throw your life into an utter turmoil. Because now, and for me, now I'm feeling all of this anger. Now, what I have done so well in suppressing and forgetting, now it's like, unfortunately, like a horror movie that's playing in my head. Because I can see it. I can feel it. I can hear it. And the pain that comes from that is so powerful for me. Because at the time that the abuse was happening, God protected me from that so that I didn't feel anything until now. So for me, my stage is beginning now as an adult. And I thank God for that because now that I'm much stronger, I don't know how I could have handled so much pain as a child. So I know you said you went through the process of forgetting and suppressing. So when your memories and your suppressed feelings started to occur, what helped you deal with those when they did start occurring?
Going to counseling. Actually, a few
Okay.
years ago, I was kind of to my limit, because our body could only take so much. And I was actually counseling. We got a phone call that one of the people that had abused me was actually in the hospital, and they did not expect him to make it. And it just kind of hit me all of a sudden. Okay, how am I going to go, deal with him? I want to ask him why. If he's going to go, I would like to know why. Why did you do this to me? And then I had things that go through, my head, like, well, how am I going to act? I don't want other people around me to know, that, this occurred. Will I be able to just go and act normal? And nobody know. I had a lot of things that went through, but and I prayed many times before I actually got down there, and I was able to cope with it, pretty good. I didn't come out and say why, because he was at a state where I couldn't get an answer. So, I just had to, compose myself and just, make it through it. And I made it through it, but it was so hard for me. It actually sent me into some depression because of having to all of a sudden deal with that. Like, again, many years I just, I blocked certain things out. So now here it is. I'm faced with having to deal with with this. So that's pretty much the way I handled it.
Okay, and I do want people to know that are on the line that the line is open. So please feel free if you have a question or comment to chime in. Another part of the stages is remembering, which you and I have already kind of discussed, because many survivors, they do suppress all their memories of what happened to them as children and or as an adult. Those who do not forget the actual incidents often forget how it felt at the time, because we do. The mind is very powerful. Then you have the part of believing it happens. A lot of times, and I've heard of stories that survivors often doubt their own perception, coming to believe that the abuse really happened, because once you accept it, then it hurts. Once you accept that you have this pain, something happened to you, then you go through the process of actually physically, you feel what the body, what the mind has protected you from so long. Now, for me, part of this next stage that was really hard for me was breaking the silence. Now, most adults, survivors keep the abuse a secret in childhood. They do not tell anyone else, and they keep it to themselves. They keep the abuse locked in. And I would suggest that you tell someone. One thing that I've learned in this journey is when I started telling my story, as painful as it is, as emotional as I get, every time I say it, whether it's a little bit or a lot, the pain, it releases some of my pain. It, I know that I'm strong, but I'm growing stronger. And I know for me, it's helping my healing. So, Stephanie, when you begin to openly admit about your abuse, could you tell a difference in maybe the way you were feeling or the way, you start analyzing certain situations?
Yeah, each time that I share things, as I haven't come out with everything that I've gone through, because I've gone through so many different levels of abuse. So I am still a work in progress on coming out with all of it. But I have gotten to the point where I do talk about it some. I I now realize that I didn't go through it for me. I went through it to help others. So now that I realize that I'm able to, you know, start talking about it more and more, does it still bother me? Yeah, it still bothers me from time to time, but I am, it's my healing process now.
Right.
I'm starting my healing process. So for a long time, you know, like I said, when I blocked it out or whatever, that was not part of the healing. All that was just blocking it out. It was still right there, and it still had to be dealt with. So now, you know, I'm going through my healing process now. And so, you know, I'm coming out with it more and more. You know, I was one of those scared of, oh, well, what are people going to think, you know, once they find out this happened and once they find out that happened, you know. And that was something I had to learn that to get told healing, I have to deal with it.
Right.
And I can't worry about what everybody else is going to think because this did happen. I have to now worry about getting my healing as well as how many others can I help? How many others are going through some of the same, some things may not be as bad as mine. Some may be worse than mine. But how many people can I reach and how many people can I help? And that is my mission now, is to help as many as I can help now.
And it's once you accept that, I was talking to a coworker today, and she said, Wanda, since I have opened up to you, because she's in the process of leaving her husband of 26 years from mental abuse. He has physically abused her, but she told me that since she has accepted what has happened to her, and now that she's moving on with her life and have really become a part of We Are Survivors and trying, you know, supporting, she told me she was actually in a dressing room a couple of weeks ago, and someone was playing a song, Mary J. Blige song, Fine. And I love that song. But they were in a separate dressing rooms humming along to two perfectly strong strangers just singing in the dressing room. And she said that the lady that was humming with her got quiet. And then you could tell she was crying. So my coworker said, you know, when they put their clothes back on, they began to talk, met outside the dressing rooms, looked up. They had been talking for over an hour. But this woman is in a very abusive relationship. And my coworker was like, since I have become a part of We Are Survivors, she's like, God is bringing these women to me, and God is showing me approachable. And it's happened. It's like I've had two different women come up to me since I've become part of We Are Survivors. And I think what happens is once we say, okay, I'm opening up, I'm going to not be a victim, I'm going to be a survivor, whether we realize it or not, that our aura speaks that. And it will draw women in that need help or want help, that need direction, because we are now that strength that they don't have. Mm-hmm. And like I tell her, I said, well, honey, welcome to our world. Come on in. We accept you so that, you know, you can be a part of helping us help other women, because I just believe by us healing women and bringing them closer in, it brings them closer into God, because that's who's going to heal. That's just going to touch them. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just like, okay, the more the merrier. Bring them in. Let's, you know, pray, talk, laugh, cry, whatever it may take. But I know once that woman begins to heal, that means you're bringing Christ in your life. Because he's the only one that's going to be able to heal you. So that's really significant to me. And I do know, too, they say, like, understanding that it wasn't your fault. Victims usually believe that the abuse is their fault. Adult survivors place the blame where it belongs, directly on the shoulders of the abusers, as we acknowledge that it wasn't our fault. But a lot of times, if you are a child survivor, as myself, then you do think that it's something you're doing. You do think of, you know, trying to figure out, well, what, like that poem, what can I do better that's going to keep you out of my room, that's going to keep your hands off of me? What can I do? Not realizing that it's not your fault. And the abuser is making that decision over your life. And they also say that making contact with a child within, many survivors have, and I've said this too, have lost touch with their own vulnerability. Because being touched as a young child, you're unable to enjoy your childhood because you're forced to be grown. You're forced to now be this monster, whether it's your punching bag, whether it's a verbal abuse, whether it's sexual abuse. Now you're having to not go outside and play and have fun and not think about nothing but getting up, brushing your teeth, putting on your clothes, and go to school. Your thought process is totally different than another child. Your fear of when that person comes in your personal space, it's unreal because your innocence is taken. Mm-hmm. And then that goes back to earlier when I said that you start doing things to cope with what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. And grieving and mourning. As children being abused and later as adults, we sometimes struggle to survive. And grieving is a way of honoring your pain, letting go, and moving into the present. Because a lot of times we get stuck with why. Why me? Mm-hmm. And they say grieving is a great way. Crying. You know, you have those moments where you just cry, and it's like I've done it, like a whale. It happens at any moment. I could be watching TV, and out of the blue, I have this overwhelming urge to purchase cry, because it's a memory that comes back, a feeling that comes back, and I can't ask why. I can't get answers. And that's one thing that some survivors seek is answers as to why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And being angry. They say anger is also considered a backbone of healing. It's, you know, it allows you to get in touch with your rage, because it takes you back to why. And the hardest thing for us to do is forgive. Yeah. Forgiveness of the abuser is a very crucial part of the healing process. You have to forgive yourself as well. Because a lot of times we say we blame ourselves, and you've got to forgive yourself. And I think for me, because I never processed it until 2 years ago, for me, I prayed about it, because when God revealed all of this to me and one swoop, I felt so much pain, so much hurt, so much anger, so much like, oh my God, that really happened to me, that I prayed that I had to forgive and keep going. because if not, that was going to hold me back. And I don't know what your process was as far as forgiving, if you had to forgive yourself and or your abuser, but what was your process with that?
Well, my process is first I had to, like I said, unblock it, cope with what I really have gone through, and then I, you know, I did have to realize, okay, I do have to forgive this person. I, you know, my thing, what I struggled with at first was I wanted to know why. And so for a while, it was like, well, I need to know why before I forgive, which was wrong. You know, I should forgive because forgiveness is my healing. It's part of my healing process. But, you know, sometimes we act on emotions and stuff. And so that is why I want to know why. Well, today I still would like to know why. But I may never know why, you know, from anybody. I may never know why. But now I know, you know, I just have to forgive and try my best to forget. Forgetting is not hard. I mean, forgetting is not easy. It's very hard.
It
you know,
is.
That process is just as, you know, it's just, what am I trying to say? I would say it would be on the same level as the healing process, trying to forget. Because a lot of people forgive and they don't forget. You know, so it's all, a lot of times if people haven't gone through abuse, and most people have gone through some type of abuse, whether they realize it or not, even if it's verbal abuse, a lot of people go through verbal abuse and don't even realize that they've gone through it, you know, because it's so common today that it's easily unrecognizable.
Right.
But if they, a lot of people, if they haven't gone through it and they don't recognize abuse, then they can't start a healing process and, you know, and cope with certain things.
And
so
understand why, and just kind of understanding why they are the person that they are. I know, too, for me, part of my healing process was working through blaming my mother. Because for me, my mother knew those instances. You know, she caught my father, left him, but went back to him. My stepfather actually told my mother that he wanted to marry me and not her. That didn't stop her from marrying him. And still has this man in my life. And my mother worked two jobs. She went from being a house mother to being gone all the time and working two jobs, which left my stepfather the only adult in the house every day. Imagine the fear of when it was time to go to bed. And so I went through blaming my mother for so much, even to the point that when I had a daughter, I kept my child away from my mom. And my daughter is really, the last few years, really getting to know her Nana, because I was so angry. Me and my mother, it was like almost like a competition for her, which I never understood because I'm your child. But I guess she always thought she was in competition with me, with other men, and I couldn't understand that thought process when I'm your child. So for me, and I only had to deal with my father, but trying to understand my mother and her thought process and why she didn't protect me. I just couldn't understand that. You know, now we are the best of friends. She is my backbone. She now, you know, with walking with me through this, is going through her healing process because she's feeling a lot of pain, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And I've had to tell her in the beginning of this, because then she would call me and, well, why didn't you? And I'm like, Mom, hey, I was a child and I still am the child. And now because I'm going through my emotions and my feelings, I can't handle yours. So now that I'm an adult, I can tell you, no, I'm not dealing with you. No, I'm not taking on your guilty feelings. I have to deal with mine. And as a survivor, when you come to that point in your life where you're at acknowledging what happened to you, there is no space to take on other people's guilty feelings or other people's emotions because now you're dealing with yours. And I had to tell my mom, I'm willing to listen to explanations, but I can't handle your emotions. I will not handle your emotions and the I didn't knows. And I know, because I know you knew. We were there together. So that's one thing, too, for survivors, is not taking, don't take on someone else's feeling, someone else's guilt, because you're dealing with your own. And I know we tend to sometimes, because we're accustomed to sweeping our feelings under the rug or being more concerned about the next person, when you acknowledge and say, okay, I'm ready to heal, then let it be about you and not someone else. Don't allow someone to pull them back into their world, because now you're working on becoming the strong individual that you should be and that you could be and that you really are, because you really survived the abuse. You're on the other side. Now it's acknowledging it and emotionally dealing with what happened. Because, you know, it's a good thing to get support. One thing that I have noticed about me is I've become aware of my behavior. And now I know and understand why I do and have done the things that I have because of the abuse that I went through. Now, Stephanie, I know with you maybe, you know, have you come across a situation where you've done something or said something, be it bad or good, and you can tie it back to the abuse that you went through?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, in a lot of cases, I'm careful about what I say. But in some cases, I feel like I just have to go there. You know, if it's something that reminds me of what I have gone through, sometimes I just have to, you know, just come on and come out with it, you know, and handle that situation because it has triggered something.
Right. And that, for me, and I'm really trying to catch it before it happens, but I become very defensive. And it doesn't matter where I'm at. Doesn't matter who it is. Prime example, today I was at work and we was in a group. It was in a room full of people. Now, they were all doing something, not paying attention to me. They were, you know, doing whatever it was that they were supposed to be doing in that area. And I was looking for an individual, and our CFO was in the room. So he overheard me ask if this person was in this room. And I collect money at work. I'm a business office manager, so I'm always talking about money. So, of course, he knew if I'm looking for someone, then it's going to be about money. And what he did was he looked at me and he's like, I know you're not getting ready to talk to that person in this room about money. And I looked at him because I went into defense mode because it's like you're calling me out. Because there's other people around. And I know that's not, you know, what his intentions were, because I couldn't want to hear him, but myself and my boss were standing there. And she laughed because they know that I am that aggressive person in my job. But for me, a switch went off. And I looked at him for a hot second, And then I touched him on his arm. I said, I had a thought, because everyone knows I'm very honest. My boss, that was one of the great things in my review. I'm very honest. And I looked at him, and I said, I had a thought, but I'm not going to say what I thought, because it wouldn't have been right. And he chuckled. He said, well, I'm giving you permission to say it. And what I told him was, because I was in defense mechanism, and I looked at him, and I said, what I thought in my head was, I don't tell you how to do your job, so don't tell me how to do mine. But that moment, I felt like I was being attacked, because you're telling me something that I already know, and you're addressing me in front of other people. So I know for me, I'm quick to go into fence mode. I don't care who it is, and I'm trying to slow that down, because I may think I'm hearing something and that's not what that person is actually saying, but because I'm trying to protect myself, I'm already at your throat, because I have this thing that no one else is going to hurt me, no one else is going to degrade me, no one else is going to talk to me and make me uncomfortable. So before I allow you to go there, I immediately try to cut you off at the knees. And majority of the time, I'm actually wrong. So I know for me, that is one thing that I am working on, is not being so defensive, because everyone is not out to hurt me. Everyone doesn't have a hidden agenda. Everyone doesn't want a piece of me. And that's something that I know that I'm trying to improve, that I've learned about myself because of the abuse. Is there, you know, maybe a character flaw of yours that you may have noticed that you're trying to improve?
Oh, I have a few that I'm trying to improve, you know. And a lot of people that know me, you know, they notice things that, you know, I've changed. And a lot of them, like you said, when you go into defense mode, a lot of people know when I'm in defense mode. You know, and of course, some know why, some don't know why. You know, but, you know, as a person that is a survivor, those are some of the things that, of course, we will understand each other. Like if something happened, if we were at an event or something and you go into that mode, I would know why you're going into that mode. Whereas, you know, depending on what type of event we're at, if it's not one about abuse, other people may not understand why you went where you went.
And that is something that I'm really diligently, I'm not quite successful at it, but I'm really trying to zone in on it, and I want to make myself aware that it's happening before it happens, so maybe it won't come out. Like I did today, I actually kind of cut it off somewhat, but if I would have cut it off completely, he would have never known that I had a thought. I just walked away and thought in my head. I probably would have mumbled it under my breath, but this go around, it was, you know, and I probably controlled it as much as I possibly could, because he was the CFO of the company. But in the same token, I feel like I've been doing this same job for 19 years. I can do this job in my sleep. So I don't, in my head, I'm thinking, I don't need you to tell me how to do this. I got it. And like I said, he meant nothing, but he was really joking. But you just don't know that person and what they're thinking and what they're feeling. Prime example, yesterday, the two that got killed, the reporter and the, I think it was a cameraman, they were, did you hear about that, where they got shot and killed on live TV?
Yes.
Right. And little bits and pieces are coming out about the shooter that, of course, you know, he used to work with them, but he was talked about and taunted. And he was known for being aggressive, had a very aggressive attitude, and that's why, you know, he was an ex-employee. But this is 2 years later. 2 years. He hadn't worked for this company in 2 years. But something triggered, something made him upset that took him back to that mental abuse that he endured while he worked there, mm-hmm. to the point he rationalized what he did. But it's just like we as humans need to really respect each other's feelings, each other as individuals, because you don't know what a person has gone through. You don't know, you know, what they've experienced in life. And I know that's easier said than done. Like people with road rage, you know, we don't know what kind of day they've had. And you pull in front of them, next thing you know, you're on the news because they had shot through your car because all you did was change lanes.
Right.
And, you know, that's just, for me, I don't have, you know, I don't feel like I don't have a temper, but I can get extremely offensive. And when I get that way, it can even cause me to cry. It like takes me, and my dad used to always tell me I have tissue paper feelings because I was so sensitive. If someone said something to me or yelled at me or looked at me, I would just start crying. And my dad would always say, "You have tissue paper feelings. Stop that." And because my dad would always say that, now it's really hard to hurt my feelings. And I shouldn't be that way. And that's something else that I find myself trying to work on. Because at my job, they're like, "Wanda, you know, you don't have to be so cut and dry, so cold. So, no, this is what I need." It's like you can be, you know, be soft, you know, have sympathy or happy. You don't have to be this. Have no feelings, no emotions, no nothing. Because it's like when something is due, and I don't want to hear any excuses. But that comes from, and people have no idea, the abuse. And it for me, it's just the way I protect myself, or, you know, making sure I don't let myself down, making sure I do what I'm supposed to do, making sure that nobody can come back and say I didn't do this and be reprimanded. Because as a child that was abused, now, we didn't get reprimanded as much. They thought we were being rewarded, in my situation, because I was able to go and do and spend and buy whatever I wanted to do or buy or however. I was being rewarded when, being realistic, I wasn't being rewarded. I was being robbed of my childhood, robbed of my innocence. I didn't get to choose who I gave myself to.
Wow.
That is something I'll never be able to. Yeah, and that is one thing that just is a wow to me, that someone decided to take my virginity. It's a wow. And it'll always be a healing process for me. Day, every single day, because I didn't have that choice. It was taken from me. I do, real quick though, want to say thank you for all the supporters for our annual benefit luncheon that we had this past Saturday.
Yeah.
Thanks for everyone that came out to a wonderful event. We really appreciate the support. The wonderful mimer, the wonderful gospel singer, the wonderful praise dancer, the wonderful speakers, and Dr. Shannon Jay, the keynote speaker. We really want to thank everyone that came out and supported. Look forward to next year. We do have more events coming up. September 8th, I will be speaking at a Crime Victims Council of Dallas County. It's their monthly luncheon. Excited about that. I wanted to thank God for you listening. I pray today that something was said that will be able to help you in your walk, in your journey. I hope that it touches your heart. We are here to help, to support, and to guide you. And in Jesus' name, God bless everyone that's listening. Stephanie, thank you so much for your input. And Stephanie and I look forward to helping many more souls. Have a good evening.
Good night, everybody.